And now, you're tuned in to RBLR, the home of Tampa Bay's Reveler Sports.
This is the RBLR Rays Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Doblo, and my co-host, Pat Davenport. Pat, how are you doing this fine winter morning?
There's a nice chill in the air. It's very cold and very windy, but don't worry, Christmas is here, and we have been gifted a very special present by the Tampa Bay Rays, and that is an outfielder that's an all-star. He hits lefty. You might have heard some things about him. Lots of buzz about him. That one you're thinking, definitely.
That's the one that you're thinking, and we're going to talk about that one that you're thinking in just a second. But before we do that, we hope that you are all having a great day as well, and hope that you are going to enjoy the show, because we've got lots to talk about. And if you want to know when we've got more to talk about throughout the rest of the offseason, drop us a follow and a subscribe so you know when we're going live and you can be a part of the conversation. We'd love to hear from you guys as always. Winter meetings are going on, so more stuff could be coming soon, and you want to know when we're going to go live to talk about it. And the easiest way to do that is to subscribe and follow. So if you're a returning viewer, we appreciate you for coming back, and drop us a subscribe and a follow. If you're a first-time viewer, stick along for the ride, because we're going to talk about that left-handed outfielder that everyone has just been wondering where he's going to go. And I got to tell you, we got him. Cedric Mullins to the Rays. It's what we all wanted and expected going into the offseason.
Who's Kyle Tucker? Who's Cody Bellinger? I don't know. I don't know those guys. I was thinking of Cedric Mullins the whole time. that was who I was thinking of. What's the word? Whelmed?
That's a pretty good. That's a pretty good reaction to it.
I'm not underwhelmed. I'm not overwhelmed. I'm whelmed.
Just whelmed
by the Cedric Mullins signing. How are you feeling about it?
That is perhaps the best word I could have come up with to describe the signing. He is 30 years old. As of last season, he hit to a 94 WRC plus. Now, he didn't get traded midseason, so he was hitting better, about a 106 WRC plus with Baltimore before he got traded to the Mets, who were sinking ship and either took Cedric Mullins down with them, or he was the reason they went down. We don't know. We're going to go with the first one because the Mets are going to Mets. But he was having a roughly within his parameters from the last several years season, which is above average bat, pretty good defense, probably out of position a little bit in center field at his current age, but still, you know, acceptable defense and around a 1.5 to 2 WAR type of player. And that's what he was doing with Baltimore before he was traded. So that's kind of what we're expecting to see him come in with, is what we've seen in the past couple of years. The all-star 6 WAR player, probably not showing up to spring training, but there's definitely some value that could be there. And we got him, I would say, right at, or maybe just a hair under market value at $7.5 million on a 1-year deal with the 2027 club. I think it's a club option, or is it?
It's a mutual option.
Mutual option for 2027. So, you know, very much a, hey, if this is working out, we'll bring you back for another year. Did you see the comments that Mullins made and that Neander made after the signing? I thought those were interesting.
I only kind of skim read them. What was it? It was kind of just like that I saw an opportunity to improve myself and improve the team, I think Mullins said something along the lines of.
Yeah, it was very much the, we've been in conversations all off season, seemed like it was going to be a good fit for me and my career and to, you know, provide some value to the team. You know, it, pretty standard, like veteran player kind of conversations. But I think, you know, it definitely doesn't seem like, you know, they're seeing him as like the savior, but more as a strong veteran presence who could provide some upside, which I think is the way to view this move, in my opinion. He's a guy that obviously, you know, we were talking about this a little bit before the show, but he has a very similar WAR profile to Jake Mangum. They provided it right around the same value, with Mullins skewing more towards power and Mangum skewing more towards on base. So, you know, I think that's a comparison to make there, where, you know, it's clear that the Rays acknowledge they need some more power from their outfield. So this is a move that, you know, you're not taking a step back from a Mangum. You're not really taking a huge step up, but you are injecting some power into the lineup. His 17 home runs would have been by far the best on the Rays. And he was at 15 home runs before he got traded to the Mets. So, you know, it's, who knows? Maybe if he had kept going with the Orioles, he would have gotten closer to 20. We'll never know. But it does seem like the power is still very much in the bat. So the hope will be, obviously, that he is able to come to the Rays, continue that power surge, and maybe find some good form in the corner outfield for a defensive perspective. Because I don't know about you, and I'll throw this question to you, is I'm expecting him to start in the corners. Are you expecting him to start at all in center or mostly in the corners?
I think mostly in the corners. I could foresee the odd game in center field, whether DeLuca needs a day off, or if there's some injuries, he might be in center field. But I think, assuming everyone's healthy and firing, I think Mullins is more likely to be a corner outfielder at this point in his career. He's still got some decent speed on him. He still projects to be around 75 percentile-ish sprint speed-wise. Mm-hmm. So he's got some speed, and he hasn't been known to be a very good fielder. He was pretty bad, particularly with the Mets in center field. Last year with the Orioles, he was okay. And previous years, he's graded quite well defensively. He still grades well in the outs above average metric, which is a good but fairly limited metric. I think with defensive metrics, you still kind of have to rely on one too much. He still grades, I think, as a good outfielder. And I think he would benefit from moving to a corner. I think he could be a plus outfielder in a corner and be like an average center fielder, because we got to remember is the bar for what good defense is in center field is much higher than in the corners, right? Because center fielders have more ground to cover, are often involved in more plays. And it's that kind of philosophy as well that the Rays really value, of being really defensively sound up the middle. And I think at this point, both Mangum and DeLuca, I would expect to be better center fielders defensively than Mullins at this point. So I think he would be third choice as a center fielder, but he can play there and play there, I think, okay. But I think DeLuca and Mangum beat him in the fielding department there. Doesn't mean that he won't ever play there, but I think it will only be because of injuries or because of like the other two needing a rest day. In terms of where he plays, does he then usurp Mangum as the opening day left fielder, for instance, and you have an opening day outfield, assuming health, of Mullins, DeLuca, and Josh Lowe? Is that how you expect them to line up opening day?
Considering they just paid Mullins $7 million, I would have to say so. Unless there is some dramatic, I mean, and it's like the thing with Mangum is I don't really know that there's much farther up to go for him unless he just hits 400. Like, I don't really know where, like, I kind of feel like last season was kind of the best case version of Jake Mangum, right? Unless he just has another gear as far as getting on base and putting the bat on the ball, like, which I don't know that he does, because I think he was already pretty good at that last year. So if that's the kind of, we know what Jake Mangum could be and we're happy with that, it makes to me more sense to say, can he find 2024 Cedric Mullins, you know, and be out there a two war type player that can hit, you know, he can scare 20 in the home run department. Like, and that's worth finding out. I think it does kind of continue the lefty heavy lineup. Although I guess I could see a lineup where it's, you know, that your lefties are Mullins, Josh Lowe, Brandon Lau, and Aranda. And you've got, so, you know, it's okay. I would have liked to see them add a right-handed outfielder of this kind of value. There just weren't a whole lot of them out there, so it is what it is. Because we're still kind of missing that. I think in the lineup, we're missing some our real right-handed outfielder, because you've got obviously two really good right-handers in Yanni and Caminero, but that's after that it just kind of falls off a cliff. And you know, with the obvious caveat that you hope Carson Williams becomes that eventually, but he's not going to be that day one. So you end up being a little bit left heavy, I guess, for impact bats to start with. But that's just kind of the way that the Rays have moved recently. So I guess you just got to be okay with that.
Personally, I don't mind it too much, just because left-handing bat means you get the long end of the platoon, right? There's more right-handed pitchers to face than there are left-handers. And we know the Rays have kind of had their struggles against lefties, and that's why I think the kind of desire for a right-handed bat is more pronounced. But I'm not actually too fussed about the righty-lefty makeup of this, because if we signed Cody Bellinger or if we signed Kyle Tucker, they're lefty bats, and I don't think anyone would have brought up the fact they're left-handed. They wouldn't have been like, oh, we're too lefty-heavy. I think it's just because Cedric Mullins is another kind of fine player. What's interesting to me now is, okay, let's say we're running a Mullins, DeLuca, and Lowe outfield. We have then got to decide on the futures of Jake Mangum, Jake Fraley, and Chandler Simpson. You can't have all three of those on the roster.
No.
And you could even throw Richie Palacios into that mix as well if you wanted to, because I think when we were doing our kind of outfield review, we were kind of tentatively including Palacios as a utility guy that could play some second and some corner outfield. So those four guys, you can't keep all four of them on a roster, I don't think. And that's also not including Ryan Vallade, but I think Vallade is pretty much locked on to start in the minors now, barring like injuries. But it means we're probably going to send at least one other guy to the minors. And I have my suspicions of who that's going to be, but I'm interested to see what you think.
Yeah, I think it's tough because the guy that I think is going to end up in the minors is Palacios, which is a bummer to me because I really like Palacios, but it doesn't seem like they're comfortable giving him a starting role. And I don't know if that is a injury thing or they just find more value in some of these other players, because like, and this is where I feel like we're in such an area of unknowns, because I don't know confidently that Cedric Mullins is like for sure better than Richie Palacios right now in like left field, right? Like, I mean, he's going to hit more home runs than Richie Palacios would hit, but I don't know for sure that he's better than Richie. And I don't know, you know, that, you know, Ryan Vallade, same thing. I don't know that he's for sure better. Same thing with Jake Fraley. But it seems like because Palacios has the flexibility to be sent down, he kind of ends up being the first one, you know, that is going to be sent down. Because again, if you send Fraley, you know, I think you're losing Fraley if you send him to the minors.
I think he's
pretty much for sure.
What about Chandler Simpson? What do you suspect about him? I think he might be down.
I think he will be too, because I think that if he was at the major league level, he's not guaranteed to start at all. And so if you said you're going to have Chandler Simpson at the major league level, he's the issue that is the primary concern with him as a major league contributor is his defense. And if he's riding the bench, that's not necessarily going to be improving his defense really at all. I mean, you'd hope that he's doing some work outside of game action, but I feel like he needs to be in the minors at least to begin the season, unless you're saying he's going to start every day. If you're saying he's going to start every day and we want to see him work on his defense at the major league level, then great. But based on all these moves they're making, that pretty clearly to me is not what the Rays are thinking. So to me, it's going to be Chandler Simpson down in the minors to begin the season, to allow him to be out there every single day working on his defense. And I'm okay with that. Obviously I would like to have him up at the major league level and, you know, and have that, the value that he provided, on the base pass be injected into the lineup. But I also think that they want to see him be able to be an everyday player. And the only way he's going to be able to do that is if he is a league average defender in the outfield. And the reality is with his speed, he should be a plus defender realistically. And you know, we're going to give him grace because he was not a outfielder coming all the way up through the minors. So we're going to give him some grace on that for sure. But I think that that's where they see his value, the potential of his value. And so they're going to say, we're going to bet on that potential and let you start in the minors in order to help you reach that potential with the knowledge that you know, there's a lot of question marks at the major league level that I think all could be basic. Like, I think Jake Fraley and Ryan Vallade are both potential to not be on the team past the All-Star break. Like, yeah, very high probability.
Vallade can hang around in the minors all year because I think he was signed on a minor league deal. But Fraley, I could even see if he sucks in spring training, I could see, or has like a like really rough time, maybe he gets DFA'd out the gate. But I think assuming they all kind of perform to what their expected levels are, I think Simpson and Palacios get sent down and we run the Lowe and DeLuca and Mullins outfield. And then Mangum is like the ideal fourth outfielder who can play center. Fraley's there as well. Maybe if Josh Lowe or Mullins are hitting well, they can maybe DH on their day off. But then Yandy's also there. It's the only thing is, if you run two outfielders, as you've got four bench spots. One is your backup catcher. One is your fourth outfielder. One needs to be a backup infielder that can play shortstop. I don't know if that'll be Carson, but you'd kind of want him getting reps. Yeah. So I don't know if that's going to, if they give Carson the keys straight out of the season or, and let Taylor Walls be the utility. And then you've got one other spot. And I guess that could be Jake Fraley, I guess.
Yeah. And this is definitely a conversation that we will get into more depth as we get through the offseason. But I think that that's maybe the biggest question of the offseason that is not related to additions and subtractions is what are the Rays going to do with Carson Williams? Because I think that affects a lot of the way the roster is constructed, like you're kind of referring to, because it does not make sense at all to sit Carson Williams on the bench at the major league level. That makes no sense. That is not what's going to happen. He will either be starting or he will be in Durham. Those are the options. And so which one that is going to have a big effect on the way the rest of the roster breaks out. Because if Williams is in the minors and you got Taylor Wall starting at shortstop, who are you bringing up to back him up? Are you saying, hey, Richie Palacios, I believe in you. You can play shortstop, right? Or is there some other move that they're going to make or some other shortstop they're going to bring up? Obviously, getting rid of Tristan Gray, you know, whatever you want to say about him, you don't have him as an option to bring him up to play shortstop. I'm not sure he was a good option to play shortstop at any point in time.
He was an option.
He could play shortstop. And so anyway, that's another conversation. But it does kind of, you know, echo the fact that there's no, I don't think anything's locked in as far as the opening day roster. There's a lot of questions still to be answered.
Yeah, 100%. I guess to give you a bit more of a insight into what Mullins is going to provide, we talked about his defense already, how it's like kind of good, but like probably not best suited to center field anymore. He's an above average runner. He runs quite well. He's got 77 percentile sprint speed, which is good for that point in his age. It might go down a smidge between years, but he'll still probably be considerably above average and steal you 20 bases because the Rays like to run him out there. I mean, he stole 22 last year, 32 the year before. So I think he can get you 20 to 25 stolen bases, which is useful. He does bring power, but like not in the conventional way. He's more of like a Isaac Paredes type power where he doesn't swing particularly hard, nor does he generate like crazy exit velos, but he's really good at pulling the ball. And when he pulls the ball in the air, he's quite good at doing that for home runs. Very similar to Isaac Paredes does, just as a left-handed hitter instead of a right-handed hitter. And if the Rays can like maybe encourage that to happen even more, maybe he can suddenly like have a little breakout. He does have a bit of swing and miss in his game. He does strike out more than the average player. But interestingly, he doesn't chase. He's kind of just a tick above average in terms of his walk percentage and his chase percentage, which, again, I would say is a upgrade plate discipline-wise on pretty much any of our outfielders. for them to like not swing every pitch, right? Because Mangum did that a lot, and Simpson did that a lot, and yeah, so it'll be good to have a guy that can show a little bit of restraint. And yeah, you'll, like you said, probably come up with somewhere between 1.5 and 2.5 WAR, which for $7.5 million is about market value, I would say, maybe a smidge under, right? Because we roughly estimate that it's somewhere close to $7 million per WAR as a free agent.
Ish. Yeah. I think, you know, I think in general, finding things at or around or under market value can be a struggle for all of us just in the marketplace. Nowhere more so than clothing. You know, I think you can always go to like a Ross or a TJ Maxx or whatever, and you can find clothes that are right, maybe right around or under market in the value perspective. But I've got a place that I know I can always go to get clothes that are, you know, going to be way over value for the market price. And that's shop.rblrsports.com. Rowdy's Bucks Lightning Rays Sun is all there, inspired by those awesome teams. Promo code Flappy, 10% off your entire order there. Shop.rblrsports.com. It is the place to be to get your best value in the marketplace.
Hey, holidays are coming. You got to get a gift for someone that loves the Rays or the Rowdies or the Lightning or the Bucks or the Sun. Hey, we got a scoop for you. Use Flappy for 10% off. I guess a notable thing that happened to make room for Cedric Mullins is that Yonny Alcure was DFA'd. The Rays, according to FanGraphs, their number 11 prospect, DFA'd before he makes a major league appearance with the Rays. He's been in a couple of spring trainings. He got added to the 40-man roster 2 off seasons ago, which was a sign of promise and a sign of belief from the Rays system, but they have DFA'd him before he makes the major leagues, after what was ultimately an injury-riddled season, but one where he really struggled in his time in AAA. What do you make of the DFA'ing of Cure?
Yeah, I think it seems like a pretty straightforward story where when they added him in 2023, they expected him to be continuing to progress the way that he had been up to that point and be challenging for some back end starts in 2025 and for the rotation in 2026. I think that's what they were projecting when they added him. And through 2024, he seemed to be right on track with that, continuing to be great in the minor leagues, continuing to do exactly what they expected him to do. And then 2025 happened, and it was injuries, and it was poor performance, and it was walking guys way too much, and it just kind of sunk his season and now put them in a situation where they would have to keep him in AAA for another full year, and he's probably not going to challenge for major league starting spots until maybe if he just is killing it, maybe the back half of 2026, but that's the earliest. And that was, I just think that was not what they were planning. And so now they're stuck with this guy who clearly is talented, clearly is valuable as a prospect, but they're having to hold on to him not affect the major league roster for longer than they expected. And so I can understand, at least from that perspective, why they might be saying, okay, we need to be, if we're being good stewards of our roster spots and we want to make sure that we're getting value and, you know, we know we need to add someone. I can see the reasoning behind this. I think what is confusing to me is why a guy like Tristan Peters is still on the 40-man roster and Cure is off, unless, and this is, I think, where, you know, the buzz has been, unless there is a trade imminent that Cure is a part of, that they are already planning to make that move and are just sort of getting ahead of it and are, you know, using that as an excuse to not get rid of Peters because they already know there's a move coming.
Right. That seems like the only plausible explanation, because there's definitely value in a team's number 11 prospect. That's the kind of thing that you would package for something. I think at worst, what might happen, though, is the Rays might get a buyer and then realize they're running out of time in the DFA window to like sort it all, and we may end up with a player to be named later.
Yeah,
just to get it through before the DFA window expires and it becomes free to everyone. That might happen. There could be something larger happening, but I think you're right that they know there's going to be buyers for a team's number 11 prospect. Like those kind of things end up, you know, that can get you a good reliever at the deadline. That can get you, you know, that can get you stuff. So, and he has a really good fastball, a decent slider. His changeup showed some promise. It's just command issues. Maybe he ends up as a reliever instead of a starter at the major league level. But like, that's still a valuable piece.
Yes.
So, yeah, I think you're right that they just need, we might see a trade go through of him, or he's getting packaged for something bigger. That would be pretty crazy. It is the winter meetings. So if there's a time to hash out a deal, we're in the perfect place for it.
Yeah.
Speaking of the winter meetings, do you see the Rays being particularly busy in the winter meetings this week?
I think unless it is some sort of move that is, again, packaging Curé with somebody else, I don't expect it. I think the Cedric Mullins move is kind of like that's kind of the move. You know, I do expect them to add a starting pitcher somewhere in there. It will happen in the winter meetings or after. I don't know. I think they're more likely to add a free agent. There's a couple of free agent options out there. But I do, like, again, I do want to really quickly kind of going back to Curé. He's only 22 years old. He'll be in his age 23 season next year. And as a guy who could scare a major league roster in 2026 at 23 years old, he's a right-hander with a good fastball, I just feel like there's a move to be made with a guy like that. So I'm honestly, like, while I'm not expecting a big move, for, like, the part of me that, like, has, you know, been a Rays fan for a long time and just doesn't expect big moves is saying that. But the part of me that just watched them DFA Yaniel Curé has me wondering if something is coming, because it just seems like such a waste of talent, which is not something the Rays usually engage in. Starting pitching talent is not something – a young starting pitcher – like with incredible upside,
can't let him go for free.
You can't let him go for free. So like that's where I'm like, is there a move? And there's been a couple of guys that have been tossed around as maybe the Rays could be into. So is there something going on there?
So let's talk about the elephant in the room. It has been reported as recently as this morning by Bob Nightingale, whether or not you trust Bob Nightingale, that's a whole story. But he's not the only person to have said this. I believe it was maybe Ken Rosenthal also said this, that the Rays have been checking in. This is what Bob Nightingale said this morning. The Rays are checking in on Ketel Marte, the Diamondbacks all-star second baseman, was an MVP finalist this year. Unbelievably good player, the best second baseman in the league, easily, right? Do you actually see the Rays getting this guy?
It depends what they're willing to give up.
Right.
And it depends because, you know, Marte is under contract until 2030 right now. The AAV is about $14.5 million-ish. The question is, you know, I really have no idea what the Diamondbacks, where they consider themselves as an organization. He is on the older side. He's 32. Ketel Marte is, you know, but I also don't think like his skill set is not like super fast guy who steals a bunch of bases. He is a pretty good defender with real power. And so that, you know, that skill set can last a little bit longer. That's where I wonder if the Rays would see that as a bad deal going into like his, you know, age 35, 36 season, you'd be paying him a lot of money. And that would, you know, hazard them against making that move. That's where my thought is. I also, like, if we're talking about what could get it done, right? Are we saying it's Curé, Bilal, and something else for Ketel Marte. I'm assuming that's the conversation of the move.
Could it be like a decent, like a Joe Rock, Ian Seymour type, or Shane Bars maybe? I think what's interesting is that Marte is a feasible acquisition for the Rays money wise. He's like, if we're talking about market value, he is set to make $16 million in 2026. The contract is backloaded. So he's used $16 million this coming season, $12 million in 2027. And then in the final 3 years of his deal, he's earning upward of $20 million. So let me put it this way. If we traded Brandon Lau in a package for Ketel Marte, that would only add, for the 2026 payroll, $4 million to the payroll.
Yeah. If we're just talking about like raw, like is it like how good, it's a good contract. Like he is making well below market value for what he's providing. Like I think that, yeah. I think that's 100% the case. I think my concern more so is those back 3 years.
There's nothing stopping the Rays trading him again.
Sure.
Like they take him and then they trade him. I mean, like, so if we're talking about $7 million per war, right? Marte put up 4.6 war this year. He put up 6.3 the year before, 4.3 the year before that. So like that's a $30 million a year player that you could get for $60 million this year and $12 million the following year.
Yeah.
Like money-wise, it makes complete sense. Like he would take on Brandon Lau's salary, essentially.
Pretty much.
Yeah. You've just got to give up some prospect capital to get to do it.
Yeah. And I love that he's a right-hander. Like I love injecting some power from the right side. Like if you're talking about like if I woke up tomorrow and heard that Ketel Marte was a Ray, I would be ecstatic. I'd probably be in a glass case of emotion because it would probably mean that Brandon Lau is a Diamondback. And so I'd have there'd be a lot going on. I'd be in a difficult place for sure. But at the end of it, you know, coming out of the tunnel at the very end, having Ketel Marte in a Rays uniform would be a huge net positive. Almost unless you're giving up like Carson Williams, like I don't know that they're the value there is really, really good if you could find a way to get Ketel Marte. What I don't know is if what are the Rays willing to give up and who are they bidding against?
Yeah. I mean, you could argue as well that they've got a lot of like, obviously their farm system's a bit weaker than it has been in previous seasons. I wouldn't say it's like a elite farm system. I think it's like a decent farm system at the moment, particularly in the upper levels. So it's not as strong as it used to be, but the Rays have too many minor leaguers. They've currently got more minor leaguers than they have spots for minor leaguers at the moment. So you could offload some guys. You'd probably have to offload some valuable guys, but it could free up space for some guys that were maybe on the fringes that they'd want to keep as well. I'm going to tantalize you a little bit. I'm going to just like put it out there. Imagine an infield of Aranda, Marte, Junior Caminero and Carson Williams and Yandy being your DH. Like that's
a playoff
the
team.
Best. You've got the second best third baseman in baseball, I could argue, right? Behind Jose Ramirez. You've got the best second baseman in baseball. You've probably got like a top five, maybe top seven first baseman. Like we're cooking.
It's probably like we've like already it's a top 10, top five first base or excuse me, infield in baseball. With Marte, I think it's probably comfortably the best infield in baseball.
Yeah.
Like I don't think there's really a whole lot of argument about that. And you know, the Rays still rank in the top 10 in their farm system in baseball. So as much as like, you know, from our perspective, we're used to them being in the top like three. So, you know, it's a huge fall for us to see them in the top 10, but there's still a lot of value in that farm. There are some really, really good guys that, again, depending on how aggressive they want to be, there is some top end talent down there in the minors that they could get rid of. Honestly, I think Cure would be one of those guys. Like I think I view him as a top end talent. And again, it's hard for me to know for sure what the, you know, how the Diamondbacks view their future and what they're looking for. But I think if you could send them, you know, Brandon Lau plus a major league ish ready starter plus Cure, maybe a major league ready reliever or starter, one or the other. I think the deal could get done. It's hard to know.
Yeah, like a Boz or a Joe Boyle or a someone like that.
I think that would be a really good, like, honestly, that I think that's a pretty good trade. Joe Boyle, Yaniel Cure, Brandon Lau for Ketel Marte. You've got you would give them immediate value, somewhat immediate value with Boz, and then future value with Boyle. With Boyle somewhat right there in the value, and then future value with Cure. Like, I think that would be a great deal. I don't know if the Diamondbacks would say yes, because I don't know what they really need right now. But I think the Ray should at least try to make that deal. As much as it hurts me to say, and it really does hurt me to say that, you know, moving on from Brandon Lau, Ketel Marte is the best second baseman in baseball. So if you can get him, you should get him.
Yeah, 100% agree. The only other thing that's like happening during the winter meetings that like you could take a little bit of interest in is the draft lottery. Do you care? I care a little bit about the draft.
I care a little bit because, again, like this, the way that we build this team is through development. So the draft lottery does matter to me.
Yeah. So as it currently stands, I don't know how much you've read into this, but as it currently stands, the Rays have the 7th best odds of the number one pick. They're currently got a 3.03% chance of the number one pick. Which feels low, but like most, you know, the Braves are 4.5, the A's are 6.5, Orioles 9.2. Like the White Sox and the Twins are the ones with the big chances. Obviously, they've definitely earned those. they've suffered for those. But the Rays are in, like, assuming the odds play out normally, like as without any surprises, the Rays would pick 7th in the 2026 draft, but have a chance to move a bit higher.
Yeah. Last year they were right around the same place and they ended up picking at like 10th, which was kind of annoying. Hopefully maybe we'll get a little reversal of fortune and maybe we'll pick, you know, 3rd or 5th, something like that. That would be exciting. I'm definitely interested because I that is the way that this team, you know, stays relevant consistently, especially as we're going through this period where we're not sure where the spending is going to be at from, you know, the new management. It's at least until the stadium gets locked in. Draft capital and draft picks are going to still be really, really important. So
100%. I mean, like the Rays haven't had a top 5 draft pick in a really long time.
A long time. Because they've been good. So they haven't been in the run.
Yeah. 2017 was the last time they had a top 5 pick when they picked Brandon McKay at number 4. Which is a shame. And then after that you have to go back to 2008. When they picked Tim Beck.
and again, top end draft picks are always it's such a double-edged sword because you see the Paul Skenes, you see the Wyatt Langfords of the world that are getting out there and immediately affecting rosters. But you see all the busts too, and there's incredible pressure on those top picks as well. I have no idea. I don't know right now what, you know, there's nobody that's like a super obvious number one overall pick right now going into 2026. There's nobody that's like broken out. But we're, you know, we haven't even started the baseball season for college yet. So will someone reveal themselves as an obvious pick that then would be, you know, someone we could root for going into the draft? We'll see.
Yeah. I mean, like, I know Tim Beckham, but like in 2007, they had the number one pick and they drafted David Price, right? By 2008, helped them get to the World Series. With the number 3 pick in 2006, they picked Evan Longoria. So like, you know, if you can get a top 5 pick, it's like the closest you can bank on, you know, it just gives you the best odds of having a guy that can affect your roster sooner rather than later. Because most draft picks take a while to move up the system, but those one to five tend to move a bit quicker.
Yeah, they do. Because, I mean, generally, if you're picking them that high, it's either because they're a massive tools guy that you expect to be. He's a young guy out of high school or whatever that you're expecting to be great in the future. Or he's basically major league ready that you're drafting out of college. Those are kind of the two categories of those top picks. So something to watch. Yeah. And I think there are definitely things to be interested in the winter meetings. I think, you know, and again, we never know what, you know, how much truth, or not, maybe not, maybe truth's the wrong word, but how much likeliness there is to these, the conversations around these players. But it's still something exciting, and it's something that we're going to be talking about regardless of whether moves are made or not. We're going to be talking about it right here. And if you have enjoyed this show and you'd like to hear us talk about those moves when they happen or if they happen, the easiest way to know when we're going live is to subscribe on YouTube or follow us on the social medias so you know when we're going to be here. It's free, doesn't sign you up for anything. It just lets you know when we're going to be live and lets you know when you can have a chance to be part of the conversation. Next week, you know, barring any dramatic moves, we're going to talk about the rotation from this last year. So if you've got thoughts about the rotation, come ready to give some thoughts. We'd love to hear from you guys. But we're going to have a jam-packed show next week as we're going to have the whole rest of the offseason.
100%. Don't count out the Rays and Mariners making a trade, because I remember Jerry DePoto once said that once he arrives at the winter meetings, the first person he looks for is Eric Neander, and they go sit in a room and see if there's a trade that could happen. Like, even if like neither of them have been like thinking about it, they'll go, can we trade with each other? So don't count that out.
Yeah, a lot of things could happen. And, you know, I think that, you know, as much as we'd love to hear the names of Kyle Tucker and Cody Bellinger, there's still lots of interesting moves that could be made here. And, you know, regardless of what exactly those moves look like, how much they're going to impact our roster, we're going to talk about them. And we hope that you'll be here to talk about them with us as well. And no matter what ends up happening, it's always going to be Rays up.
Rays up.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLI Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.